Samsung unveiled its latest gadgets this week at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. But it seems to have joined Apple in the ranks of troubled tech giants. On Tuesday, it warned profits would be down almost 30% in the latest quarter. The Korean firm says a slide in demand for chips is to blame.
China has made further moves to open up its car market, and Tesla's Elon Musk took the wheel at a ceremony for the company's future plant, China's first wholly foreign-owned car factory. Tesla hopes producing cars locally will help minimize the impact of a trade war, which has seen a rise in tariffs on cars imported from the US. But the carmaker is building the $2 billion plant in an auto market that likely contracted last year for the first time in decades. Not that Musk was letting that rain on his parade.
This is a humanitarian crisis, a crisis of the heart and a crisis of the soul. Women and children are the biggest victims, by far, of our broken system. This is the tragic reality of illegal immigration on our southern border. This is the cycle of human suffering that I am determined to end.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's January 9th. And it's 5:11 in the morning. Thank you for being with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Lots to cover this morning. You heard some of it there in the opening montage. Of course, the president's big address last night, the Oval Office address on the southern border issue. The president claiming it's some security crisis, national security crisis. The Democratic response immediately after that, throwing a little water on that. Fact checkers as well. Wondering whether or not that is really the case. Many saying it is not. We'll have full coverage of the president's remarks throughout the morning here and in our news segments coming up, news, weather, and sports coming up. And on our broadcast this morning, we have a couple of really cool guests this morning, good conversations to have. First up this morning, Lenore Skenazy, the president of Let Grow and the founder of Free Range Kids Movement. Are we protecting our children too much? The business of parenting in our first segment this morning. And a little bit later on, personal income, fluctuating personal income may be associated with an increased heart disease risk, according to new research. And we'll have one of the researchers with us at 5:40 this morning to talk about that. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures up anywhere from a third to nearly a half a percent this morning. Markets in the green in Europe this morning with the FTSE in London, the DAX in Germany, the CAC in France, all up by nearly a percent or more. And in Asia this morning, markets also in the green with the Nikkei going to end the day up nearly a percent, 223 points. The Hang Seng up nearly 2.25, 586 points. And oil is trading at $50.75 a barrel. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. The once invincible retail giant Sears may be facing its final few hours. A bankruptcy judge yesterday gave chairman and former CEO Eddie Lampert until 3 o'clock Chicago time today to come up with a $120 million deposit to allow for a deal to keep 425 Sears and Kmart stores open and safe from liquidation. The 126-year-old company with more than 50,000 employees is on the path to liquidation if a deal is not struck. Sears, which also owns Kmart, filed for bankruptcy protection back in October. Apple is scaling back first quarter production plans for three new iPhones. Reports out this morning say Apple is cutting planned productivity for its three new iPhone models by about 10% in the first 3 months of the year. The cuts reflect weakening demand for iPhones in China, which is the world's biggest smartphone market. The news comes a week after Apple slashed its quarterly sales forecast. China's economy continues to slow during the trade war with the United States. The overprotected American child, front and center this morning here on the Opening Bell. We're happy to have with us Lenore Skenazy, the president of Let Grow. You can find them online at letgrow.org. And you may remember her as the founder, too, of the Free Range Kids Movement. Lenore, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I'm really happy to be on WGN. I was just tweeting. I grew up in Wilmette, Illinois, so it's you know, I certainly grew up with WGN.
Oh, well, that's nice. Well, welcome to the show. Welcome to our air this morning. This is going to be a good conversation because I think it's one that parents have constantly with themselves and other parents about whether or not our kids are overprotected. Why is this issue so important?
Well, I'll start with an anecdote, and you tell me if you can see from it. The other day, I was interviewing a bunch of grammar school kids, you know, kindergarten through fifth grade. And I was talking to a fifth grader, and I said, okay, what would you do on your own if you were finally given a little independence, some of the independence that I was thinking of that I grew up with? And he said, oh, he had a dream, and that was to get himself to judo. And I thought, okay, that's promising. And I said, are you going to take a bike? Are you going to walk there? Do you have a skateboard? How are you going to get there? And he said, no, you don't understand. I'm going to open the door, the car door, and I'm going to look around both ways very carefully. Then I'm going to close the car door and walk into judo while my mom parks the car in the parking lot.
Wow.
So for him, his dream of independence as a 10 or 11-year-old boy was about 20 seconds from the car door into another class that was run by an adult after school. So to me, that's sort of growing up almost overprotected to the point of having no idea that you can do anything on your own, that the world is out there for you, that it's pretty safe, and you can ride your bike, and you can get to know the neighbors, and you can go get a Slurpee. All of that is not even a dream of his. Really, the dream is to walk while his mom is parking the car. Does that shock you at all?
It does a little, and, you know, I'm immediately think back to my childhood many years ago, and obviously the world's a different place, but when we came home from school, we were allowed to go and play until it got dark and ride our bicycles everywhere. I mean, the world has changed, but still, that we have some freedom.
Right, and let's unpack for a second. The world has changed. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, there is, you know, for instance, here in a big city, there's more crime, I'm guessing. It's a little bit more dangerous.
I feel bad. Chicago has this reputation as being so dangerous, and there are some neighborhoods that I feel terrible for. But in terms of crime statistics, the whole country is at a 50-year crime low. It doesn't feel that way. All we hear about is the horrible stories. But nationally, the crime rate is back to what it was in 1963. So the idea that suddenly you can't do the things that we did, it was just a different era in terms of what people expected. If you expect absolute no crime, then yeah, you can't let your kids outside. But even when we were growing up, it's not like there was no crime. It's just that we could keep it in perspective long enough, or our parents could, to say, okay, you can go out, because if you're waiting for zero crime, you can might as well put your kid in the tower like Rapunzel. It's upsetting to me that the perception that no child is safe walking out the door ever, no matter what neighborhood in all of greater Chicagoland, is a perception, but it's not reality.
Yeah, and the problem here, and I don't want to say necessarily the problem, but the impact is one that we're raising kids who could be emotionally fragile, physically and emotionally fragile, but that could be bad for their future, but also for the country's future. And that's what this organization, Let Grow, talks about. Why for the country? Why for our future?
Well, let's think about it for a second. So here you have this kid who hasn't been outside on his own. He's never made up a game with his friends because he never met up with them at the park and said, let's play baseball. And they start playing baseball and it's too boring because, I don't know, for some reason. And they decide to let's do it backwards, right? Let's go to third base and then second base and then first base. And then everyone says no. And some people say yes. And so they have to take a vote and then they decide how they're going to play it. And then they have so much fun and they make their own decisions. Was the ball in or out? They have to make the teams. And when the little kid who's tagging along with one of the kids gets up to bat, well, the pitcher throws the ball gently to the 5-year-old because the pitcher is 12 and there's no reason to strike out a 5-year-old, right? Not going to prove anything great. And so that's the beginnings of empathy. So what you have when you have kids doing things on their own, you know, getting into some scrapes and having some fun, you have kids developing creativity, some kind of leadership, some kind of empathy when that small kid is up there. The small kid doesn't want to look like a baby to the cool old kids, you know, to the 9-year-olds, for God's sake. So he starts holding himself together. And what you have are people learning to make things happen and learning how to get along and learning to deal with some frustration. There's no adult there intermediating. And the Parents Magazine, which is the magazine that you read if you're a parent and you think you need some advice from the outside world, had an article a couple of years ago, and it was called The Playdate Playbook. So already it's assuming that there are parents running all the play dates. And one of the questions was, my kid is old enough to stay home alone for a little bit while I go to the store, but now she has a friend over. Can I leave both of them there while I, you know, run an errand? And the magazine said, absolutely not. You want to be there in case there's a spat. You don't want anyone's feelings to get hurt. And so what you're talking about is a country where kids don't do anything on their own, don't learn how to make things happen, and have had adults there making them feel good any time that they were a little upset, and they would normally have dealt with it on their own and, you know, hashed it out, come to some compromise, maybe been upset. And so when you have kids growing up this way, where there's always been an adult there to sort of concierge their lives, you know, make it work easier and smoother and simpler, I don't think you develop the kind of spirit that you're going to need to get along at college or in the workplace, because you've never had to make something happen. You've never had, it's not never, but you've had much less opportunity to live. And there's a theory that, so Jonathan Haidt, who wrote The Coddling of the American Mind, and I are two of the founders of Let Grow. And one of the theories is that between, like all other species, when they're born, they go straight to reproductive age, they reproduce, and that's the way the species works. In humans, you're born and you're getting bigger, 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 then around 7 or 8 or 9, it slows down. And you're sort of, you grow a little slower until about age 12, puberty, when everything kicks in again. And the theory is that that's the time when kids just have to be taking in so much that that's their job. They can't reach adulthood without first having this time when they are playing, they're copying their parents, they're practicing adulthood. They're, you know, if you were in a hunter-gatherer society, you'd be making arrowheads and going out, learning how to, you know, shoot rabbits or something like that. But if you don't have those experiences at that time because you're in the back of a car being driven from school to lacrosse, to homework help, to dinner, to, you know, read aloud, not that any of those things are bad, but if there's never any chance for you to make things happen, you don't fully develop. And that could be one of the reasons that we are seeing enormous increases in childhood anxiety, and I don't even like to talk about it, but there's an increase in child suicide too. And you haven't developed the inner wherewithal to make things happen and to deal with them when they do. So we think we're keeping our kids safe, but actually we're taking away the very formative time when they should be developing the skills for adulthood.
We're talking about overprotected American children and maybe loosening the reins a little bit. And that's my next question, Lenore. Where do we begin here? I know this is not a conversation just for parents, but for communities as well. So there has to be some first steps here.
Right. Communities, I think, are the key, because you can't be the only person, or you can try, but it's hard to be the only person who is letting grow, you know, letting your kid go to the park. Your kid goes to the park if there's nobody else there because everybody else is in some organized activity or indoors with their electronic devices. Well, your kid is going to be back in 5 minutes. So it's something that communities have to do together. And a good community is a school. So a bunch of schools have started doing the Let Grow Project, which is, you know, on our website. And it's simply this. It's the entire school, all the teachers tell all the kids, and this is for K-8, to go home and do one thing on their own. It can be walk the dog, play outside, run an errand, make dinner. If the neighborhood's too dangerous and you have to stay inside, go down the hall and visit a neighbor. Anything where the kid is finally doing something on their own without an adult watching, teaching, intervening, helping. Because always helping your kids is not always helping them. They're ending up, fragile, like we were talking about before, anxious because they haven't learned that they can do things and that the world is good and that they can be part of it. And so schools that have done this, there's just a lovely story the other day. One neighborhood place in Connecticut, it's called the town called Wilton, did the Let Grow Project in the school. And there's a little market there. And one of the kids went for his Let Grow Project. He was going to go get a cupcake. And the people see a kid come in on his own. I don't know what grade he was in, third or fourth grade. And they're like, what's he doing here? He's by himself. Where's his mother? What's going on? And they asked him, why are you here by yourself? And he explained, I'm doing a Let Grow Project. It's from the school. And they're like, oh, okay. And then after he left, over the next week, all these other kids come in on their own. And now it's like, oh, it's a Let Grow kid. Oh, it's a Let Grow kid. So suddenly, being a kid on your own went from being so weird that the establishment of the market had to talk to you to now it's normal again, just like you were talking about with your childhood. It was normal to see kids on their bikes and kids walking to school. 11% of kids is the number now that walk to school in America. So if a whole school does the Let Grow Project, it not only gets the kids back out there, but it helps the parents, because the parents don't know when they're allowed to let their kids do anything anymore. Because what age did you walk to school, Steve?
I remember being as young as 9 years old, walking to school, taking the bus and walking to school, both riding my bicycle at maybe age 10 or 11.
Right. Well, believe it or not, I remember being five.
Wow.
walking to kindergarten in Milmet, Illinois. And when I got to the corner, the crossing guard was a kid. Do you remember kid crossing guards?
I don't know. That's interesting.
That's after your time. You're way younger.
Yeah.
In any event, it was not that long ago. I'm still alive. That, 10-year-olds were considered responsible enough and smart enough and alert enough to help younger kids across the street. There wasn't another adult being the crossing guard for the crossing guard. So to my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom who stayed at home to be protective, it was still normal to give kids their freedom. And after school, I could come home and either watch WGN or go outside with my friend and play kickball or go to the park or whatever. But you can't do it if you're the only parent. So when a school does the Let Grow Project, that really helps break the ice for the parent and for the kid. And the best part about it is that listening to me, talking to you, it might make sense to a lot of people. I was thinking, who's getting up this early? They're the go-getters, right? So it probably resonates. But it still doesn't convince you to change, because nothing convinces you to change unless you're forced to. And so this is a gentle push for parents to let go. And you talk about it with your kid. We give a list of, it's all free on our site, but there's a list of things the kids can do, from make a sandwich for the kindergartners to go to the store and get a cake mix and come home and make a cake. And when your kid does come home from the store or from walking to their friend's house or from doing an errand from you or raking the leaves, whatever, running an errand, it is such a fantastic moment for the parent. The parent is so proud. The kid comes back through the door with the Wonder Bread for dinner. The parents are eating it and they're going, this is the best bread ever. And look at what my kid did. Because we're hardwired. As much as we're hardwired to protect, we're also hardwired to love seeing our kids do something on their own. It's like when you're a parent and you hear that your kid was at some other kid's house and he put his dish in the sink. And you're like, wait a minute, my kid? Kid with curly hair? You can't believe that your kid did something so responsible on their own. And you're like the Grinch, your heart grows three sizes. And so with the project, you finally get that reward for being a parent, the reward of seeing your kid growing up and doing something without you, which frankly is what parenting is about. Eventually, you want your kid to be able to survive, literally survive without you. And you need, these moments are so powerful, because that's when you're finding out you've done your job.
Well, Lenore, this is a great conversation. You've given us a lot to think about today, and some marching orders is due. We appreciate you being with us for us parents to give us some ideas about maybe changing behavior and changing our minds on some of this stuff. We appreciate you being with us.
Steve, I'm so happy you called, and I really am honored. If you told me when I was that little five-year-old walking to school that someday I'd be on WGN, I would have been, you know, turning cartwheels, which is something that kids also have forgotten how to do.
Well, it's a lovely conversation, and please come back and join us sometime.
Will do, Steve. Thanks.
All right. Lenore Scanese, president of Let Grow, founder of the Free Range Kids Movement. You can find more about Let Grow online. Again, the website is letgrow.org.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Our focus now shifts to money and health. New research indicates that fluctuating personal income may be associated with an increased risk of heart disease and dying prematurely. Joining us this morning is Samuel Swift, a PhD candidate in epidemiology at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Samuel, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Good to be here.
This study is one that I think got a lot of people's attention because I think at one point or another we all have money problems. Why is this? What's behind this increased risk of heart disease? What is it about this money situation that causes this?
Well, Steve, we're going to have to do more research to look into that. I think what's different about this study that we're really finding is most people, when they do a study like this, they find that low income measured at one point in time can be a risk for these diseases. But we found is that over the lifetime, having your income go up and down can be a risk for cardiovascular disease, which includes stroke and heart attacks. Yeah, we're doing more research to look into that.
And so what we're talking about then is, you know, following people over the course of many years, and are they do they continually have this fluctuating income? Is that sort of the scenario that has been studied here?
Yeah, exactly. So what we found is that people that have fluctuations in incomes, and that's not just income drops, right? Although we looked at income drops as a secondary predictor, can be at risk for these things. But often these income fluctuations are marked by drops in incomes, usually unexpected. And that's what income volatility is defined as.
And income volatility is one that has never been more significant these days because of the difference in income. The folks at the top making a lot, folks at the bottom not so much. And then also ongoing threats to federal programs that help people with income and help people survive. How does all of that play into the potential research here?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we're hoping is that out of our research, more people will look at interventions that can kind of assuage this now that we've shown this association. So we know that income volatility has been on the rise since the 1980s, and it's the highest it's ever been. And while we don't have evidence to directly make policy recommendations, our hope is that other researchers will go on and draw those types of implications from our findings.
One of the things that struck me about this, and there are a couple, but the impact on young adults specifically mentioned here in this research. Talk to us a little about what the study found about young adults and money.
Oh, sure. So these are people that are having heart attacks and strokes and other cardiovascular events prematurely. And I think this is the most significant finding of our study. And it's not a small effect either. This is twice the risk of people that did not have income volatility. And so during the time of our study period observation, these people were at a formidable period of their earnings. So they were age 30 to 45. So we consider that, while some of us might not consider that young adults, we consider that very young for these types of outcomes. And the follow-up period was after that to about age 55. So yeah, we consider that too young to be having these events.
Yeah, and the study started actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but in 1990. So a lot of these folks have been followed for a number of years, including people here in Chicago as part of this study. Samuel, I have to ask you this. I know you want to do more research on this, but what does your gut tell you about what might be going on here?
Sure. So we actually are doing more research on this, and what we're following up on is seeing if there's various pathways that this could be happening through. So we know that when people have money troubles, they may have a harder time either working out or getting good foods. So it could be through lifestyle factors such as those, or it could be through stress responses that are caused by these money troubles. So I think a lot of people are familiar with research on cortisol, stress hormones, other inflammatory biomarkers, things that can basically the stress of these money problems having this physiological manifestation of cardiovascular disease.
You look down the road here, I'm struck by money problems are not necessarily easy to get over. And so if it is that stress part of this, how do you solve this? What would be the solution or the help here going forward if you find those are the indications? Those are not easy to solve.
Yeah, so unfortunately, in our line of work, we get this type of question a lot. We often say prevention, right? So, preventing these things before they happen. There's a lot of medicine out there for cardiovascular disease, but the best thing to do is for people to be aware that these associations exist, right? These are real things that we find, and it's not just something you kind of hear about. Another thing is that, like I said before, we hope that other researchers will go and look at our findings and make policy recommendations and do policy types of studies to see how this can be addressed on a societal level.
Yeah, and equally concerning, too, one of those other indications from this early research, women and African Americans more likely to experience the income volatility and income drops than white men. So that's a concerning part of all of this.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's a disparity that we see often in this type of social epidemiology research, right? And I think another finding that can be taken into account when designing interventions and policies to kind of help this problem.
All right. Well, Samuel, we appreciate you being with us this morning. We look forward to further research on this, and thank you again for being on this morning.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Our Samuel Swift, a PhD candidate in epidemiology at University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. We're going to link out to the study funded by the National Institutes of Health and the American Heart Association.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk futures pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street, Dow, NASDAQ, and S&P futures up anywhere from 0.25% to 1/3. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We lead this morning with a Supreme Court story that declined to get involved in a legal dispute involving 15 states that want to strike down laws in California requiring larger living areas for some farm animals. The Attorney General's office in Missouri, which spearheaded one of the lawsuits, vowed yesterday to continue fighting for local farmers and consumers and said it was considering the next step. Supreme Court didn't cite a reason for rejecting the lawsuits in a brief order Monday, although it noted Justice Clarence Thomas would have granted the motions. And in the grain trade yesterday at the Chicago Board of Trade, we saw prices lower for wheat, corn, and soybeans. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You too. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Wednesday, January 1st. The weekly report on mortgage applications is due from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Applications were down sharply last week despite interest rates falling to the lowest level in 3 months. Rising costs of homes and continuing shortage of inventory are holding down activity. Also today, the EIA petroleum status report's due out. We'll also get the Fed minutes at 1 o'clock Chicago time. And on the earnings calendar, WD-40, KB Home, and Bed Bath & Beyond. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, January the 9th.